This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/MBO. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
With everything that's gone on over the past day or so, it may not feel like it, but the Cardinals finished off a series win at Busch Stadium on Wednesday. We'll talk about it coming up on B-Shape Daily. What's going on, everyone, and welcome in to this edition of B-Shape Daily. Brendan Schaefer recording here in the evening hours of Wednesday, April 24th, 2024. Cardinals won a series, ladies and gentlemen. They won a rubber game and a series finale all in one. It was the first final game of a series that the Cardinals won all year. I think they were 0 for their first 7, picking up the last game of a series, but they got it done this afternoon at Busch Stadium, 5-1 over the Arizona Diamondbacks. They take the series 2 out of 3. Don't ask me about the run differential because that didn't go their way, but you know what? They don't talk about the run differential in the standings at the end of the season. How many games did you win? How many games did you lose? And we know that right now the Cardinals have lost more games than they've won. I understand that part of it. But today was big. Today felt like a win that the Cardinals needed to get. And it's pretty, I guess you could say it's unfortunate that right now when we're talking about the wins this team comes up with, almost all of them were saying that about, oh, this was one they really needed. It's almost as though that's how difficult it feels right now for the Cardinals to get wins. And I don't think that's necessarily a good thing. Again, I'm stream of consciousness on this show. I kind of tell you what I'm thinking in the moment. And it just dawned on me like, man, how many times have we said that when they've won a tough game? Oh, this was one they really needed to get. Maybe not the best of signs when you're only in the month of April, right? But it does feel like every day is just a grind and a claw and a scrap for this Cardinals team to avoid having last year happen all over again. Maybe that's the sentiment. Maybe that's why it feels that way. Let me know, Cardinals fans out there, in the comments section here on YouTube, if you feel that way as well, or if it's just my interpretation and maybe I'm doing the media guy hack thing where I say, oh man, that really feels like one they needed to get. But like, if you walk back through this series against Arizona, and quick reminder, hit that subscribe button if you haven't subscribed to the channel. I'm Brendan Schaefer, St. Louis Cardinals writer for KMOV, and I do Cardinals content every day here on this YouTube channel. But take you back to Monday night where the Cardinals get the walk-off. Goldschmidt, Gorman, they come through. It felt like it had been years before we saw either of those guys do anything special offensively prior to those moments. Obviously, it had not been years, but the slump was real for both of them. And to have both of them come through in the same game Monday, it was like, hey, did the light switch just turn on? But as Paul Goldschmidt forewarned in his post-game comments after Monday's win, that doesn't guarantee anything in the future. That doesn't guarantee success the next day. And the next day was not successful. Cardinals lost 14-1 on Tuesday. They got a rough outing from Steven Matz, an even worse outing from Zach Thompson, who, as we know now, is on his way to Memphis or there already. And the offense didn't perform in that game on Tuesday. Contreras hit a dinger, and that's all you got. That was it against an Arizona starter, Tommy Henry, who had some really rough numbers coming into the game. Tuesday set up on paper like everything about it should have gone the Cardinals' way, and it very much did not. So now you've got whiplash as a Cardinal fan, and you're like, well, where do we go from here? What's Wednesday going to bring? You look up the schedule. Oh, boy, it's a day game. They're going to have to get back at it. You look up the probable starters. Oh, boy, it's the Jordan Montgomery game. Here we go. The narrative almost wrote itself, right? If you had that pessimistic mindset of the way things seemingly were going, The Cardinals at this point are still below 500. So even after we sit here talking about a 5-1 win on Wednesday, maybe you're still of a bit of a pessimistic mindset after the series win. And that's completely fair if you are, because it was weird. Like, this doesn't feel like a series that the Cardinals won. It doesn't feel like they just took 2 of 3 over the last 3 days because of all the... It's been a grind. Like, mentally, it's been a grind talking about, and I feel like Cardinals fans might have the same just feeling about the last few days, this team. Yeah, you win the first one, but you almost got no hit. Not almost, but through half the game, you were getting no hit, essentially. And yeah, you won that game, but let's see what they do the next night. Oh yeah, they're right back to getting curb stomped, 14-1. That's no good. Now you got to face Jordan Montgomery. Like, it just felt like the narrative was there to be written. I could see the Facebook comments and the YouTube comments already. I had them envisioned in my mind of, see, should have signed Montgomery. He just shoved. He just threw 8 shutout or whatever it is that it seemed like he was going to do. And for a time on Wednesday, Jordan Montgomery was doing that thing. Held the Cardinals scoreless through 5 innings on Wednesday afternoon. He was really, really good. But the Cardinals found a way there in the 6th inning to get to him and change the narrative and flip the script and get the win for St. Louis in not only the game, but the series. And I thought it was perfect. You heard me mention this perhaps if you listened to the last clip on the YouTube channel, which was from my friend Andy and I on the KTGR Big Show from Wednesday afternoon. I thought it was perfect that Wilson Contreras was the one to sort of get things going in this game. In the 6th inning, Donovan got the base hit with 1 out in the bottom of the 6th, but then the double off of Montgomery for Contreras, that one felt like a legit, like that was kind of the rally starter to me because it put 2 runners in scoring position. I'll be darned if Nolan Arenado doesn't come through with an RBI base knock, and then you get the wild pitch that Wilson Contreras is able to score on, which is poetic justice at its finest, is it not, folks? And you might be like, well, what is he talking about? And so I alluded to it a little bit on the previous video. I'm going to recap for people who may not have watched that one because they might have looked and said, well, that's a 15-minute video. I can guess that this is not the B-Shaped Daily podcast, and I don't listen to the other videos on the channel that aren't the main podcast of the day, which is fine. I don't know how people view it on YouTube. Maybe I'm overthinking it. But if you haven't heard me talk about this yet, I'll do it here again on the flagship show of this YouTube channel. And this kind of plays into part of what the conversation about Jordan Montgomery's free agency was to me, and why when I would get all these comments about people saying, Mo needs to bring him back, why wouldn't they make an offer? It was always tricky for me because I thought I could see on both sides why they wouldn't want to reunite with the other side. For the Cardinals, it was the perception, I think, of a lengthy deal in part, and the Cardinals maybe didn't want to overextend because, as I've talked about, they're looking at a world where if 2024 goes poorly, there remains an escape hatch for this organization that they can get out of a lot of the financial commitments that they currently have on the roster, several of them short-term. Arenado's is a little longer-term, but they can trade some of that money if they're really going to go into a bit of a retool for 2025. And they've kind of left the door open for that. Is that the right move? No, I think fans wanted to see urgency and urgency only to win in 2024. And that's why a lot of folks said, look, you should have signed Montgomery or a comparable starter, especially as those deals, it became apparent they weren't getting the 4, 5, or 6 year deals they wanted in this year's free agency. Blake Snell, by the way, though, on the injured list, that news coming out today. So again, I'm not saying that justifies or doesn't justify the way that his free agency went, but I do think there was a perception that he was a little bit more of an injury-related concern than some other guys, despite the fact that he won Cy Young last year. That might have played into Blake Snell not getting the lengthy commitment that he wanted in the offseason. But I bring all of this up to say that the way the Cardinals structured their offseason was to blend the two goals of compete again, have a winning record, try to make the playoffs and make a push when you get there in 2024 with a backseat idea of maybe don't go all in on this and overcommit to players that you're not sure about beyond 2024 just to convince them to come here. because we may have to sort of reorganize things if we're unable to right the ship. Don't want to get into a New York Mets spot or some of those teams that spend a lot of money. They throw it around and it's really fun at the time. But then when you sit back and look at it and the winning season doesn't come to fruition, now you go, oh boy, this is the group that we've got that we've paid to be here for the coming years and they didn't get it done this year. So are they supposed to get it done as they age even more? Oh boy, here we go. I think the Cardinals ownership, front office, whoever you want to attribute it to, had that mindset a little bit in the offseason. But the other part of it with Jordan Montgomery, other than what I had said multiple times, was the Cardinals are paying five starters. Like Steven Matz is $11 million, and that's about tied for the least salaried starting pitcher. Lynn and Gibson were kind of in that range too. They're paying five starters. You may think that Steven Matz profiles better as a reliever because he tends to wear down in that fifth inning every time. And you might be right about that, but the Cardinals paid him to be a starter, and so that's the role that he's filling, for better or worse. And if you want to be upset about that, I think that's reasonable. I think that's understandable because, you know, they could have, in the minds of some, anticipated that Matz might kind of be up and down in this regard and not be the type of innings eater that they basically were saying they wanted littered throughout their rotation. So I could understand the criticism there if that's where you come from. I get it. I knew they were never going to make a signing, and I particularly knew they were never going to sign. And when I say make a signing, I mean after Gray. They had their five. They might have made a trade in another world, but the price point would have had to have met their interest and their ask. It would have kind of had to fall into their lap, and that didn't happen on any of the marquee names that you would have been looking at. That would have made sense because if a Dylan Cease trade, let's say, comes to fruition and you're comfortable with the ask, his price point was not the amount that you'd have spent on a Jordan Montgomery in free agency. He was making, you know, $7 or $8 million, whatever it is, for this year in arbitration. I don't know the exact number, but that would have been minimal enough that you could have rearranged some things, moved Steven Matz to the bullpen for a year or whatever, year or two. I think Cease has 2 years of control. And like that, I could have seen that. But the price point, I just don't think was ever met. And when you look at what Cease ultimately was dealt for, there was a pitching prospect in there, Drew Thorpe, that the Cardinals just didn't have a Drew Thorpe at the time to offer back for Dylan Cease to the White Sox. So I think that's how those trades tend to come to fruition. But I knew the Cardinals were never at the end going to swoop in and sign Jordan Montgomery. I knew it because of the money thing, but I also knew it because of just the sinking feeling that I had that maybe mutually it was better for both sides to go their separate ways. People are like, well, why wouldn't the Cardinals offer Jordan Montgomery? You could have. Yeah, sure, they could have. Maybe they did. I don't think they did. Be surprised if they did, but I don't know for sure that they didn't. I don't have that information. But I would say that you could kind of feel your way through this one and go, that's not happening, is it? Guy leaves St. Louis at the trade deadline, gets plopped into a great situation with a team that ends up winning the World Series. He should be as happy as a clam.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/MBO. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Most of you listening right now are probably multitasking. Yep, while you're listening to me talk, you're probably also driving, cleaning, exercising, or maybe even grocery shopping. But if you're not in some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you can be doing right now. Getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy, and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
But when he was with the Cardinals, I don't know that he was as happy as a clam. I mean, it was a little tenuous, I think, for Jordan Montgomery at times. And I think when we take ourselves back to last April and the way the Wilson Contreras saga unfolded at the beginning with the Cardinals, and you get into the very beginning of May, I think it was, and they announce he's going to play the outfield for a little bit. And they go, wait a minute, just kidding. That's very dumb. That's not going to happen. But he is going to DH exclusively for a minute, and we're going to try to work on some things for him as it pertains to his work behind the plate. It's not permanent. We're going to do a terrible job of the way that we put the messaging out here. There's going to be conflicting stories from what Mozeliak says to what Marmol then says to Mozeliak, then having to go back and say it differently the next day. Like, the messaging on that was poor. It just was. They could have handled it a lot better. And to the credit of the organization, Mozeliak has said so since. Would have preferred to have kept it in-house, to have reacted a little bit differently at the time when all of this was sort of blowing up behind the scenes. They would have handled it differently if they had it to do over again. So that's since been admitted by Mozeliak. And he also said they were probably naive to think that another catcher, it wasn't fair to another catcher to have him come in and try and stand in Yadi's shoes and have the Cardinals just think everything was going to go smoothly and like clockwork and there weren't going to be any issues. And the part of that that I think they underestimated the most was the idea that when there's another catcher back there, the pitching staff is going to be used to a certain way of doing things. Doesn't necessarily make them right or wrong, but that's what they're used to. And it doesn't necessarily make what Wilson did or didn't do right or wrong on an objective stance, but it's just what he's used to. And like, it's just stands to reason that you would be blending some of those elements and there might be some miscommunications. There might be some things that need to get ironed out, and you got to have your team-wide communication on point. So when one of your starters, two of your starters rather, is at the World Baseball Classic and misses a lot of spring training where some of that getting on the same page kind of stuff could have happened, and then one of them gets injured and he's out for the first month anyway, and that guy happens to be the veteran-most starter of the group, so he's not maybe around as much as he would have been as things start to sort of disintegrate between the pitcher and the catcher in terms of the daily battery for the team. And things are just kind of not going well. And clearly the Cardinals didn't expect this to take place or it wouldn't have caught them by surprise the way that it did. But I think at some point you had some starting pitchers saying, hey, this isn't tenable. What's going on here? What's this guy doing? And that ended up being the story that comes out, and Wilson Contreras just has to wear it. Might not have even really all been his fault, but he just had to wear it. What was a mass miscommunication within the organization, the scapegoat became Wilson Contreras. Whereas I think in reality, how do these situations really go most of the time? There are differing viewpoints on various sides of an issue, and maybe if everybody had come together and communicated more effectively, you could learn that, yeah, everybody's a little bit partially responsible for what's going on here and how they handled themselves in a given situation. And if we were looking out for the guy, for Wilson Contreras, and having his back, they wouldn't have allowed it to devolve the way that it did last year at the beginning of the season. It becomes such a public, I mean, it was like a national laughingstock across the game because people said, oh, the Cardinals, they think this guy can't catch. Ah, he's been a catcher for a long time, but the Cardinals think he can't. I mean, the media narratives were out of control, but like, that's the messaging the Cardinals put out. They can wear that. And I know that we're reiterating and rehashing and beating a dead horse at this point for something that's already long since been done, but I think it's relevant as we talk about the game on Wednesday because it's kind of known out there that, you know, Jack Flaherty maybe made some comments after the Angels game that he said, you know, he got blown up by the Angels and he said, making pitches that don't make sense. And was that a shot at Wilson or was that just him saying, you know, pitchers need to take better responsibility? The fact that Jack felt the need to clarify this offseason, or it might have been this spring, but clarify that he wasn't talking about Wilson, but that means at least enough people thought he was, that it was a storyline that he was at least aware of, right? So we're connecting some dots there. But the Flaherty stuff, I think, had been documented. But you know what? Doesn't really get talked about as much. And we talked about it last year, so some of you who have listened to the show all the way back to then might remember it as a topic of conversation. But you remember how Jordan Montgomery never seemed to pitch to Wilson Contreras when he was with the Cardinals last year? Like, his battery mate was always somebody else, it seemed like. I'm just going to give you some of the facts of this, and you can draw your own conclusions. But I went through the game logs, and I did this last year. I just did it again tonight because I wanted to make sure I was getting this right before I talked about it. Contreras was the starting catcher for each of the first five starts of the season for Jordan Montgomery. And remember, Montgomery came over the prior trade deadline, so he was with the Cardinals the last couple of months in the final year of Yadi, and Kiz was the backup, and they had maybe a little Herrera at the time. I'm not going to go back and look and see what month it was that Herrera was up, but it was Yadi and Kisner for the most part, if I'm recalling that correctly. But then to begin 2023, Contreras caught him five times. The 29th of April, and you remember this is kind of when everything started swirling around a little bit, Kisner caught him on the 29th of April, and then Kisner started at catcher on the 5th of May when Montgomery was pitching. Wilson came in as catcher later in the game, and the Cardinals actually burned the DH to do it, but he didn't start, didn't throw. Montgomery didn't throw to him that day. The next day, the 6th of May, is when the Cardinals say, no more catcher. Wilson's going to be benched from catcher for a little bit. He's going to be an outfielder. Just kidding. He's going to be a DH. That all kind of started on the 6th of May when, you remember, Trace Barrera was called up, is how all that sort of began to swirl. And he was there in the clubhouse, and Wilson Contreras was like, who's this guy? What's he doing here? And I'm being facetious about the who's this guy part, but I think the what's he doing here was real. I think you would have run into him at spring training, so he knew who he was. What's he doing here is what I recall was the reaction from Contreras. It was not well explained at the time, which this has been documented. But then it's until the 13th of May that Contreras is not catching, right? He was kind of benched for a week or so. Montgomery started on May 10th. It was Kisner. But then he's back to catching. They announce on the 13th he's going to come back. Wilson's going to be mixed back into the catcher position. But on the 16th of May, the 22nd of May, and the 28th of May, it's Andrew Kisner still catching for Montgomery. Remember, five in a row, Contreras to begin the season. Then he's back to catching, but for three straight starts, it happens to be Kiz. And there was always an explanation, and maybe it was plausible, and maybe it was part of the equation. There's a lefty on the other side. They wanted to get Kisner's bat in, so you're going to DH Contreras, and you're going to put Kiz behind the plate, whatever the case would be. Obviously, Contreras can't catch every game, so they would mix it around, but it always did seem to fall on the Monty starts. They had Wilson catch him on the 3rd of June and the 9th of June. In those two games, Montgomery gave up, in the first one, four runs, but only one of them were earned, and it was errors by, I think, Arenado and Steven Matz that scored a couple of unearned runs, whatever the case was there. It may have been Matz relieving. I don't remember. There was no Wilson Contreras error, I checked. The 9th, Wilson Contreras was his catcher. He didn't give up any earned runs. And then on the 16th, 20th, and 27th of June, Kisner. 2nd of July, Kisner. Ivan Herrera on the 7th. Contreras one more time on the 18th of July, where he gave up one earned run. Ivan Herrera and then Kisner on the 28th of July, and that was his final start with the Cardinals because he was traded day or two later, whatever it was. So you start out Wilson Contreras every single game because he's the primary catcher, and then he sort of is the main catcher again, but not for this guy, for whatever reason. It was usually Andrew Kisner. There were reasons, like I said, that were given, so I'm just laying out the facts of the case is all I'm doing. You can draw your own conclusion. But there is another element of this that I would look at and say, you remember when nobody locally, and you know, this is on me too, I couldn't get the scoop, but nobody locally had the scoop on what actually was going on with Contreras. It was a lot of vague, weird talk from the Cardinals, and I think they were trying to tread carefully because they had a piece of information that they felt was sensitive, and they were, I think in their heart of hearts, were trying to protect Contreras from having it maybe leak out exactly what was going on. But as we've since found out, there was maybe some issue going on with the pitch comm where Contreras was maybe pressing the wrong button from time to time, pressing a button for a pitch that guy didn't throw. And then, you know, from there, pitchers were going, well, I don't throw that pitch. Why is he, you know, it feels like it was a communication device situation that maybe could have been at the heart of a lot of this. I'm not going to say it was all of it because I don't know. I don't really know what all of the gripes were about Wilson Contreras that the pitchers may have had, but it was the pitchers coming to the organization, whether that was to Ollie, direct to Mo, I assume it would be Ollie then transferred to Mo, to say, like, this isn't working out, this guy's doing this or that, and it was sort of like you had a mutiny on your hands. But we didn't really know the details of it, right? And we had said, all right, we've since seen enough about the Flaherty stuff to think that maybe Flaherty wasn't pleased about something going on. But Montgomery doesn't really get mentioned. However, when the information comes out, who reports it but Yankees announcer Michael Kay. He said, I talked to a lot of Cardinals people, and Turns out what was happening was that Contreras was on the pitch comp calling for, say, a cutter, but that pitcher didn't throw a cutter, and it was driving the pitchers crazy. That's the first, like, concrete report of what actually might have been going on that was sort of the smoking gun. Everybody's like, there's got to be something weird that happened. What, did he forget how to catch? No, he's been catching for years in the big leagues. What's going on? And it felt like maybe that was just the thing that was the primary driver. Again, there may be people out there who know better information, but I'm just kind of looking at what's out there and saying, that seemed like it was something the Cardinals might try to keep bottled up, but then it gets out. However it happened, the Yankees had played at the Cardinals that week or whatever it was, and he talked to Michael Kay, talked to people from the Cardinals, whoever that might have been, whoever he might have had a relationship with, maybe a guy who used to play on the Yankees. I don't know for sure, but could you connect those dots and wonder if that conversation happened, perhaps? Yeah, maybe. I truly, and I'm not being facetious, just like I said on the radio show today, I don't know for a fact that that's the communication that was had, but the guy never seemed to throw to Contreras, and then the Yankees come to town, and suddenly the information's out there. So, I don't know. I don't know if that ends up being as simple as it looks to be on the surface, but again, I think if you play the dot connecting game, you can go, all right, maybe he wasn't a jerk about it, but it seemed as though there was a preference for Jordan Montgomery to maybe throw to another catcher.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
And I say not a jerk about it because nothing was said publicly. There was no smoking gun. There was no quote that later he had to go back and apologize for, like Jack Flaherty felt compelled to do later on. None of that happened, but the facts of the case are, yeah, they didn't really match up as a battery very often, and the guy was the team's primary catcher. So he's going to be the primary catcher moving forward, and people thought it was weird. The Cardinals maybe didn't reach out to Montgomery, and Montgomery maybe felt just fine about that because when he got to leave, he won a World Series, and that's a great situation, and maybe that was a bit of a tumultuous year for him and felt like, all right, that wasn't a situation that I'm going to go back to. Like, I could see all of those things maybe being the case. And if I'm Wilson Contreras, who kind of got thrown under the bus on the whole deal, I might be very motivated to hit a double that starts the rally that gets the Cardinals the win against Jordan Montgomery today. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. And good for him, dude. Wilson Contreras deserves it. He can be the catalyst of this Cardinals team if they let him. I feel like it was a hard thing for him to do last year because of all the weirdness going on that was not his fault. And like, look, if that's really what it was and it was the PitchCom thing, can we be adults about this and treat this guy like a person and get this figured out without maybe having some catty back talk and stuff that's leaving this guy feeling like he's iced out of a new team? That's not cool, man. I don't feel good about that. Again, I don't think I have a perfect handle on everything that went down, but I feel like I can piece together enough to where if that's my conclusion, I go, man, that should never have happened. There should have been multiple people at multiple steps of the way last year that didn't let that happen to Contreras the way that it did. That's just me. So yeah, that's an emotional player that, how much have they said when he's on the other side, you don't like him? Wilson said, I play that way. I play for you not to like me if you're on the other team. But he's the kind of guy you should be really glad is on your team. And I don't know if the Cardinals, I mean, they sure didn't make him feel that way last year based on the actions, right? I wouldn't have felt too good about it. But he handled it like such a pro. He goes to Wrigley Field. That's all happening right before they go to Wrigley. and he goes and has a great series offensively, you know, that's an emotional thing. The dude played his whole career with Chicago, and then you drop this bomb on him right before that series. Again, could have been handled better by the Orc. But Wilson was a pro about it. He didn't let it phase him. Maybe privately he did. Maybe privately he's going, I really wish they wouldn't be, what's a guy got to do to fit in with the new team? But publicly, man, he put on a brave face and he went out there and went to war for the team. So if this season can be about anything for the Cardinals and they're going to make something of themselves in 2024, they're 11-14. There's a ways to go. They won the game on Wednesday in part thanks to the contributions of Wilson Contreras with the big double. He also drew a walk, but he scored that go-ahead run on the wild pitch. Montgomery trying to cover home plate. Not quick enough. Wilson gets in there after his own wild pitch. It's delicious. Gobble that right up is what I say, Cardinals fans. And have the back of Wilson Contreras. And I know Cardinals fans do. I think Cardinals fans did the entire way through because they see the energy and the emotion that the guy plays with. But I think that if this Cardinals team, as I was getting to say a moment ago, if this season's going to go anywhere, it's going to be on the back of Wilson Contreras, of guys like him, where he can be a guy that can be a catalyst for this team. He's got a 951 OPS that leads the team. He's batting in the two hole right now. I like that spot for him. Get him up in the early portion of the game. Get him up as early as you can with the way things are going right now. Goldie went 2-for-4 today, stroked a nice double to left off of Montgomery. That's a good sign, the way he swung the bat there. Batting average is up to 200, OPS up to 572. He's coming around. He'll come around. The power numbers may not be there for him and Arenado. That's a concern if those guys don't end up hitting their standard 25-30 homers. You're going to notice that differential. I think you'll notice that at the end of the year. But it's coming around. But man, Wilson Contreras, I feel good for Wilson to get the day that he had today. And in that matchup, I think it's even better that it happened the way that it did. And then you think about, all right, Cardinals didn't sign Montgomery in the offseason. What did they do? Well, they signed Kyle Gibson. How about that guy? It's not always a comfortable watch on a day like today where the base runners are getting on against him and there's some danger. But Gibby did a great job pitching out of it, didn't he? Had the bases loaded, nobody out to begin the game, and only gives up one run in that inning. Sack fly, double play, bam, you're out of it. Didn't give up a run the rest of the way. And people don't love this because it sounds like an excuse because people contextualize it wrong, in my opinion. But I'm going to give you the stat anyway because I think it's interesting. It doesn't mean that Kyle Gibson gets to remove the worst inning of his season so far and it doesn't count against him, but I at least think the context is interesting to point out. If you remove, which again, you can't do this, let me make sure everybody understands this is not me making an excuse for what the numbers are. I just find it interesting, and I'll tell you why. I'll give you the context. But if you take away the six-run inning that he had against the Marlins to begin that game, where there was some scuttlebutt that maybe he was kind of tipping pitches or something, was letting the other team, they were able to pick up on what was going on with him, and gave up 2 3-run bombs in that first inning. If you take that inning away, not that whole start, just that inning, because he settled in, remember, after that. He threw six innings, and he only gave up one more run. You take that inning out, Kyle Gibson has a 2.70 ERA on the season. And again, I know you can't just take it out because that inning in particular cost the Cardinals a baseball game. They lost the game because of that inning, and it was bad. It was a bad inning. But the rest of the way, Gibson has been really solid this season, including when he was able to mop up some innings that day so the bullpen didn't have to. Again, if you thought he was going to be your number five, maybe he is, but he's been pitching pretty well. And there will be days where he doesn't get out of the jam as effectively as he did today. He let guys on base. He had to pitch around some trouble, but he did so really, really effectively. Talked about it after the game as to how that's just sort of something that you learn over time. You do well with it enough times, and you struggle with it enough times over the course of a career that you try to replicate the things you did when you were able to get out of the jams the last time. And it won't always work, but he knows a thing or two about pitching because he's seen a thing or two about pitching. So Kyle Gibson goes six innings today and gives up one run. That'll play. That'll play, Cardinals fans. The six strikeouts will play, too. Couple of walks, gave up five hits, scattered some base runners. That first inning in particular was dangerous, but he got through it. 88 pitches, so he was really efficient. ERA for the season without removing the bad inning is 4.35. If you said November 28th, whatever, once you had all those three pitchers signed, hey, Kyle Gibson, 4.35 ERA, would you take it for 2024? I think everybody would have said yes. Because he's like the back end of the rotation. That's the way you kind of viewed him in your mind. But he might have more in the tank than that. He might be able to bring a little bit more than that. And he's bringing it right now. 4.35 ERA, you take that, especially considering the one bad inning where, again, if it was just an inning and there wasn't the notion of, well, he might have been kind of tipping and they found something and they addressed it quickly. With that, I almost feel like it does make it a little bit more sensible to throw out the inning because you go, all right, don't make that mistake again. And maybe this is a better reflection of the pitcher he's been. You got to stay vigilant about certain things like that. But Kyle Gibson pitched his butt off today and he's done a nice job for the Cardinals so far. And he was the one that I think everybody said, they shouldn't have signed Gibby. Everybody liked Lance Lynn, and everybody kind of said, well, the Cardinals need to get Sonny Gray, and they got him, and they needed to have gotten maybe like a number two behind Sonny Gray. So Lynn or Gibson, get one of the two, but don't get both. And I think if everybody had their choice, they would have said, I know Lance Lynn already. Bring him back. Why'd they sign Gibson? They could have signed somebody else or traded for somebody and had a real number two. All right, fine. I like what we're seeing from Kyle Gibson, though, ladies and gentlemen. M-I-Z. By the way, he's panning out so far. Hey, this might be a different podcast 2 weeks from now. Steven Matz was doing really well until he wasn't, so I understand things can change. It's early cuts both ways. You can say it's early, the offense is going to turn around, or it's early, maybe the starting pitcher is performing above his head, above his expectations, and is going to come back down to earth. Both of those things can be true. It cuts both ways. If we're going to be fair about it, we have to acknowledge that. But what do you think so far about what you're seeing from Kyle Gibson, Cardinals fans? Because you ask me, Gibby's been pretty good. Pretty good. Got the win today, improves to 2-2 on the year. Eating some innings, gets you through six. Even Lance Lynn's only done that once out of five starts. He hasn't been the innings eater guy necessarily. Throwing a few too many balls out of the strike zone, eating up pitch count at times, not able to get as deep even when he's pitching well. I think Lance Lynn's going to be just fine, going to be more than fine. But what Gibson has done so far for this team, I think, is kind of underrated, to be honest with you. Good to see the offense find a rally today as well. Cardinals score in the 6th, 7th, and 8th. They tack on. They weren't satisfied to lead the game 2-1. They put up a run in the 7th. They put up a couple more in the 8th. Insurance is good. They were able to take some advantage of an error. Mason Wynn gets on base. Scores from first. I mean, that is the kind of baseball you like to see. They get a little hit and run going with Nolan Gorman, who drives in. I mean, Mason Wynn, if he's stealing second with the pitch, he is in scoring position at first base. Pretty routine single to left by Gorman. It was in the gap a little bit, but it was not in the gap enough that Gorman would have made second. I think Mason Wynn, if he had hit a ball there, might have made second on it, might have tried. Victor Scott probably would have tried. Siani probably would have tried. But it was a base hit. It was just a single. And Wynn, off with the pitch, putting the hit and run on. Opposite field base knock by Gorman. Great. They call it a good piece of hitting. That's what they call that in a hit and run situation. And Mason Wynn, man, scores easily. He was damn near to second base by the time the ball was hit and just didn't turn the Jets off the whole way through. So you get some insurance from that. And then Lars Nootbaar comes up with a big swing. Bottom of the 8th inning. Credit to Pedro Páez. He got into the game and walked to help set up that Lars Nootbaar RBI, two RBI double. Páez went from first to third on the double. Cardinals win it 5-1. And I mentioned Páez. That's the last thing we're going to talk about. Something interesting happened in the post game that was asked about. And Ollie Marmol's answer, I think, was notable. Something we should talk about here. The fact that Páez was in the game in the first place. He entered the game late for Ivan Herrera, who started the game at catcher. Wilson was the DH in the game today. And the question was, okay, what happened with Herrera? Why replace him? Although, if you've been watching the game, you may have noticed a couple of balls get by. I don't know. I think the first one was ruled a wild pitch. I'll check on the second one. It was also ruled a wild pitch. They hardly ever call pass balls in baseball anymore, the official scorer. I kind of thought both of them would have been acceptably marked as pass balls by Ivan Herrera. Just breaking balls that were spiked. And so they were spiked and didn't keep in front of him. The first one goes right through the five hole. He tries to get down on it with the glove, kind of pulls up, and that his body wasn't on the floor, on the ground. I called it the floor. It wasn't on the dirt to kind of block, keep it in front, and the other one kind of off to his right. He kind of stabs a little bit at it, didn't have the body position to block it. They gave up a few free bases as a result of the defense there today. And I think the numbers, the metrics back this up. That Herrera, we love what he's been doing at the plate. Still maybe some work in progress to be had behind the plate defensively. And today was an example of that with a couple of balls. They were wild pitches, but like I said, if they would have called them pass balls, I wouldn't have blinked. I thought those are balls you got to keep in front of. Every 90 feet counts when it comes to a close game like today's was, especially before the Cardinals got that insurance. So, you know, that's a little bit of a concern. And Ollie Marmol was asked about it post-game, and I really don't have a problem with what he said, but I know that there may be some that find issue with it. But I'll play you Katie Wu's question and Ollie Marmol's answer on, was it an injury for Herrera? What was going on there? And we'll let you hear that courtesy of Bally Sports Midwest.
Your decision to put Pajas in later in the game, is that defense-based? Or is Herrera dealing with something?
No, Herrera's not dealing with anything. It was defense-based. We wanted to make sure that if they're going to get 90 feet, they were going to have to earn it.
Sure.
Yeah.
So that's Cardinals manager Ollie Marmol on Wednesday's decision. I think it was eighth inning or so late in the game. Still tighter at that point. The Cardinals hadn't scored the extra two runs on Nootbaar's hit in the bottom of the eighth inning. So I believe that was when it was a 3-1 game that the decision was made. I could go back and look. I'd be a better podcast host and reporter if I did. I didn't cover this game. I think I told you guys that at the beginning of the day. I was home with the kid today, hanging out. But still watched the game, obviously. But it was late in the game. It was eighth inning, whatever it was. Yeah, top of the eighth inning when the defensive sub was made. And it was interesting because you had Pajas' spot in the lineup come up fourth, I believe it was, in the bottom of the eighth. So you knew that you were very potentially taking the bat out of Herrera's hands for that final inning. You could have done it the other way, where maybe you let him stay in for that eighth inning. It's a 3-1 game. You let him stay in, and if he gets to bat, then if you really wanted to replace for defense, you could do it in the ninth. Could do it for the top of the ninth inning. But they go ahead and do it. Cardinals do it there for the eighth inning, at the same time that Kittredge comes in to replace Jojo Romero, which, by the way, the bullpen remains. These guys are nasty. Romero, Kittredge, Helsley, just disgusting. Three more scoreless innings for that group. Romero is at 1.46 ERA. Kittredge is 0.90. Helsley, 2.08. And I think he's even been better than that number indicates, because I still don't really hold the earned run against him that Bryce Harper, I think, scored that day against Philadelphia, because he was intentionally walked only because the Manfred man, automatic runner, was on second base in the 10th. So I think even a little bit better than the numbers would indicate for Ryan Helsley is how good he's pitched. So it was definitely interesting that the Cardinals opt to go for defense there, up to saying every 90 feet is going to count potentially in this game. So we're going to go with Pajas, who clearly the perception from the organization is better defensively than Herrera at this point. I mentioned the couple of wild pitches that could have gone either way on the official ruling. And then there's the notion of base stealing. If the Diamondbacks had gotten anybody on base there in the eighth, it was Peterson, Walker, and Eugenio Suarez that were due up 1-2-3 in the eighth. And it ended up being a base hit for Jock Peterson. Double play quickly was able to get out of that was Andrew Kittredge, and then got Suarez to pop out to end the inning. So pretty quick inning once again for Kittredge, who has just remained hyper-efficient. He only threw seven pitches. It was over in a blink, despite allowing a base runner to get on. And so it's not like maybe even, like, Jock Peterson could probably steal a base, but I don't think Christian Walker or Suarez are maybe doing much running. But that was the decision that was made. I think it was interesting, the timing of it. Again, if you're still 3-1 and you've got Corbin Carroll due up in the top of the ninth, then maybe you try to put out the catcher that you believe has the best chance of nabbing a base stealer, because Carroll would certainly be plausibly somebody that could swipe it back. Not sure Jake McCarthy, he was the leadoff hitter there in the ninth. I don't know what his reputation is for stealing bases, but I could certainly find out for you here. Yeah, he can steal some bases. He's only 2-for-3 this year, but he was 26 for 30 last year and 23 for 26 the year before. So he steals frequently enough. Consecutive seasons of 20-plus steals. What's crazy is, as I was looking at this, you heard me pause there briefly, looking at this on Baseball Reference. For a second, I thought I read the wrong category, because in 2022, Jake McCarthy, outfielder for Arizona, this is, nobody cares about this, but it's kind of wild, had 23 stolen bases and 23 bases on balls, 23 walks. And then in 2023, he had 26 stolen bases and 26 walks. 2 years in a row, the same number of walks as stolen bases. So when I looked, I thought I had messed it up. I'm like, wait a minute, I just read the walks category. I did, but I didn't, because it's the same for both of them. Anyway, nobody cares about that, but that's a fun stat that Jake McCarthy, however many walks he gets this year, he'll also steal that number of bases. Right now he's leading 3 walks to 2 steals, the more you know. But anyway, it would have made sense then, right, to bring in Páez, if you believe in his defense, better for the ninth. But it's interesting they did it before the ninth inning. But maybe something happens, and like, if a guy gets on base, if one of those guys gets on base in the eighth inning, and I read it was Peterson, Walker, Suarez, then you would start to have McCarthy and Carroll do up next, and either of those guys can steal a base, and those would have been the tying runs. So maybe that explains it. Like, let's just say it's a base hit by Peterson, but they don't ground into the double play, and then McCarthy comes up and maybe gets a single, it's first and third. You don't want to necessarily give up that second base to the trail runner, because it puts him in scoring position as the tying run. Or better yet, Corbin Carroll, maybe there's a home run earlier in the inning, and Carroll comes up, gets on first. He's the go-ahead run at that point. You don't want to give him second base. So maybe that is exactly the thought process. But the fact that they weighed it above having Herrera take the at-bat was fascinating, which I think that's typical when you're up in a game, in a close game setting, 3-1, you're going to usually make the play for defense. But it's often more convenient to do that right after the guy that you're taking out has batted. And that's the guy that you would like to have in there for his ABs, because if he's a defensive liability, clearly he's only in the lineup to hit as the primary motivation. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Interesting strategically. Take that part away from it, though. What's it say about the role of Páez on the roster? Might make a little bit more sense to have the third catcher if they're kind of trying to protect Herrera a little bit. He's 0 for 9 throwing out stolen base attempts at second base. I keep lamenting this. I still have not found a better place to find this, but StatCast, Baseball Savant, lists second base. It says SB attempt, but then it's got in parentheses 2B, which I assume would mean for second base. So I don't know if Herrera's given up anything on somebody stealing third. I seem to remember it happening, but it may have been a pass ball or something and not a stolen base. But he's 0 for 9 throwing out runners at second base. There are a handful of other catchers. No, it actually looks like there's only two. Two other catchers, Maldonado and Tyler Stevenson, who are also 0 for 9, who have had that many attempts but have not thrown anybody out. And then Omar Narvaez has gone 0 for 10 on those stolen base attempts, trying to get base runners out, thrown out at second. That's the lead league in the category you don't really want to lead the league in. Everybody else with at least 9 or more opportunities has thrown one person or more out. Stevenson, Maldonado, Herrera, and Narvaez are the ones who have not. So he's toward the bottom of the league in terms of efficiency, throwing out base runners. He hasn't done it at all to this point. And so the Cardinals are looking at that going, all right, we're going to have to try and figure out how we're going to handle this late game situation. We want Herrera to be in there a lot because of his bat. We also want him to continue to get reps catching, and it makes sense to have him swap on and off with Contreras, who's going to DH a lot. Maybe at times you'll see Herrera DH, but the late inning situation, it's kind of like subbing in your speedy outfielder for a guy who's not as strong in the range department defensively. You just don't normally see it with catcher. And I think it's valid. I really like Ivan Herrera, but there are strides, I think, that need to be made still defensively. And the Cardinals are maybe going to do that. That's the first time I can recall this happening since Páez has come back up. But I think that's going to be something interesting to monitor, that it might be the hands team where you actually bring in a different catcher to handle things defensively. Kind of interesting. Let me know, Cardinals fans, what you think of that. That's not something you normally see, but I kind of questioned and said, do you really need the third catcher? Love Pedro Páez. I love his game. I think he's a good player. But roster construction-wise, bench construction-wise, do you need a third catcher on the roster? Or can you just say, let's say they're both in the lineup, Herrera and Contreras, and one of them gets hurt. All right, the DH has to be burned so you can put the other one behind the plate for the last couple innings of a game. Sure, worst case scenario, the guy gets hurt in the first inning and you play a whole game without a DH. But the next day, you can call up a catcher if a guy needs the IL. So it's I feel like they overblow a little bit the impact that would have to need having a third guy on the roster at the catcher position. But if they're going to use him as a defensive replacement late, then maybe that's part of the explanation too. Let me know, Cardinals fans, what you think about that. I don't want to rip Yvonne Herrera because I think he's going to be a very valuable player to the Cardinals this year. Important player with what he can do offensively. He swings a good bat, and I think the more he's in the lineup, the better. Seeing a little bit of a decline at the plate right now. OPS is down actually under 700. Didn't end up getting a hit today, but didn't strike out either in this game. So we'll see exactly how they want to manage that, but interesting. I think they could afford to move Herrera down in the lineup a little bit. Just me speaking, I think you still want to keep him in there, but like probably shouldn't bat above Lars Nootbaar sort of thing. So, you know, we'll see what that ends up looking like as far as how they want to use him moving forward. But that was the circumstance today. They bring in Páez for Herrera late defensively in the contest. But takeaway, Cardinals win it 5-1. They take the series. They're 11-14 on the season. They're going to have an off day on Thursday. Good time for it after a nice win like today. Reset, refresh, come out there with a strong bullpen ready to go in New York when they take on the Mets on Friday night. It would have been a long 51-hour layover if Jordan Montgomery had shoved it you know where on the Cardinals and lose the series in that sort of fashion by the offense being dormant once again. And then you got to wait 51 hours to play another game. That would have been tough. That would have been kind of difficult. But as it is, the Cardinals get the win. You can feel good about that. Yeah, the run differential definitely took a hit this weekend, or pardon me, this week, this midweek series. They're minus 26 on the run differential. Only the Marlins and Rockies are worse in the NL, and the White Sox are holy F. I knew the White Sox were bad, but they're minus 79, and they're 3-20. Nobody told me they were 3-20. I just thought, ha-ha, White Sox are bad. I didn't actually bother looking until this moment. They're 3-20 with a negative 79 run differential. The Athletics and the Astros are worse than the Cardinals' run differential in the American League. So the Cardinals are 6th from the bottom in run differential, which functionally doesn't matter that much. And when you lose 14-1 one day, you kind of mail it in that day, that's going to hurt your run differential. That's going to have an impact on the old boy. But yeah, Cardinals are in last place, but they're looking up at the Pirates, only 2 games away from them, 3 back of the Reds, 4 back of the Cubs, 5 back of the Brewers. Brewers are playing some good baseball so far, but we'll see if that sticks. The Cardinals, that's what really hurts about the whole thing. If they had just took one of those games against Milwaukee, they'd be 12-13. Brewers would be 14-9. That's what, a 3-game differential instead of a 5-game differential? Not taking one of those games against Milwaukee is really going to sting them, and potentially that's going to sting them all year. But right now, there's still time to make that up. You just only get to play the Brewers so many times. You cannot continue to lose divisional series, especially in the form of sweeps. That will be a quick darn way to end the season for the St. Louis Cardinals. But that's going to do it for this edition of the show. We talked about a lot tonight. Let me know in the comments below what you think, what you thought about all of it. I'm going to link once again. We got one subscriber on Spotify. It'll be ad-free. If you like the show, but you're like, the ads are inundating, I don't like it. Ad-free Spotify subscription is available for B-Shape Daily. Check out the link in the description. That's going to be all for now. That'll do it for this edition of the show. Appreciate you guys as always. And we'll talk to you next time on B-Shape Daily. Peace.